This is the TSN MMA show with Aaron Bronstetter and Bazooka Joe Valtellini.
Robert Whittaker and Yoel Romero put it all on the line, even though there's nothing on the line. CM Punk loses again. What would you do if you were him? Colby Covington talks the talk and walks the walk. He is the new UFC interim welterweight champion. Curtis Blaydes continues his rapid ascent up the heavyweight ladder. And Greg Hardy gets signed to the UFC. Good thing, bad thing, we'll discuss. Thanks to those listening on TSN Radio in Toronto and Ottawa. And if you're listening to the podcast, please tell your friends, review the show, and subscribe. We always appreciate the feedback that we get for this show. So please feel free to let us know if you think there's anything we can do better or things that you like. Joe, UFC 225 in the books. How did you score Romero Whittaker? That was kind of a point of contention. At first, I thought it was a robbery, but then I saw a lot of people were scoring it for Whittaker, and obviously Whittaker
won. Yeah,
we're
jumping right into it. But
yeah, let's go.
When I watched it, I gave three rounds to Whittaker.
Okay.
I thought Whittaker had it. I thought the biggest thing was I think he dominated most of the fight with his striking, his movement, but the time that Romero did well, he did more damage, and I think that's what plays in a lot of people wanting to go to Romero. But great fight regardless. That third round was just bananas.
Oh, yeah. That was one of the best rounds I've seen. Did you think that the fifth round could have been a 10-8 for Romero? That's the big thing that people are saying.
Yeah, and a lot of people were even saying they thought Romero won outright for 3-4
and
5.
That's how I had it.
You had him winning 3-4
and 5?
I had him
winning 3-4 and 5. Because at the end, the fourth round...
So with the potential of a 10-8 in round 5 as well?
I didn't give the fifth round a 10-8. I'd have to go back and watch it to see if it was a 10-8. At the time, I didn't think it was. For the fourth round, the thing that grabbed me was Whittaker had the round in hand for most of it. But then at the end, he got tagged by Romero and was on wonky legs and managed to survive it. But to me, when you get somebody on legs like that.
Bambi legs,
giraffe legs, whatever you want to call them. That to me is almost like the equivalent of a knockdown.
Yeah.
And that's the part that really stuck out to me as the most damaging blow of the round. And of course, you have to take it minute by minute, but that kind of thing is a significant. It's basically like a knockdown in my eyes.
That's always the big question. And if you have 5 minutes, if one guy's winning 4.5 minutes of it, but in 30 seconds of it, he took the most damage, right?
But if he's winning 4.5 minutes, how is he winning the 4.5 minutes? Is he dominating, or is it just like he's outpointing him a little bit?
No, I get it. I think that's going to be always a debate, and that's probably one of the biggest challenges. Me as a commentator is getting to being asked. Todd Grisham asked me, "What do you think happened?" Well, if one guy's outlanding, and Glory scored a little differently because they really they value damage. So
10-8 rounds
I can do a thousand jabs, but if you hit me with two right hands that rock me, split my eye open, then the two shots will win the round. So MMA, I know, is a lot about control, but I mean, I would have called it a 10-9. When I saw it, I just thought Whittaker did enough.
The thing is, it's not really about control. Control's not really part of the criteria.
The big issue in scoring, though.
Yeah, I mean, top control, I think, plays a factor, but in terms of actual cage control, I think it's like the third or fourth, if I remember what John McCarthy said, it's like the third or fourth criteria for scoring a round. Like, it's like, if this is even and this is even, then you go to cage control.
Yeah, but Rick, I think that the issue with cage control is one where still valuing a takedown. If you take someone down, we're always going to talk about this, and you don't do anything, like, should it be scored? Do you know what I mean? Or if the guy on the bottom is trying to attack, that's going to be an issue always. What about the guy who counterfights, who's always circling around? Look at Darren Till and Wonderboy. You know, you got the counterfighter versus the pressure fighter. Usually the pressure fighter is going to win a lot of the times, but sometimes it's not. So you never really know what the judges are looking at, depending on what night, what judges you have. It's crazy. I just think it'll always be up in the air like that.
Yeah, the situation with Romero missing weight was interesting as well. Abe Kawa, who's his manager, him and Malky Kawa, but Abe was the one who was on site with him. He was on the MMA Hour, the final. Ariel Helwani hosted MMA Hour on Monday. And was saying that basically they were told in advance that if Yoel didn't come in on weight, he'd have 2 hours to cut the additional weight.
Yeah.
Their goal was to get him on weight right from the jump, but when he was 186, they knew that he had to go and weigh in, and he would have 2 hours after that to make the weight. So he got on the scale 186. They said that he felt okay. Then they basically what happened was he had Lockhart, who's one of the best nutritionists in the sport, sit him down. I think it was Lockhart that they hired, but basically told him to sit down, relax for 20 minutes, and then we'll start the cut again. Like, let him kind of...
Yeah, it took his time.
Yeah, take your time. So they started cutting again after the 20 minutes, and like 5 or 10 minutes into the cut, the commission said, no, he needs to stop cutting. We need to weigh him.
Yeah.
And they were rushing him for some reason, and they couldn't get an explanation as to why, the doctors and the commission had cleared him to do the additional 2 hours. And he got down to 185.2. So that 0.2 pounds cost him a title shot and $120,000, because he had to give up 20% of his purse, and he had to give up the fight bonus for fight of the night.
Yeah, that was your tweet. That was pretty insane when I saw that.
So they're basically, from what Kawa said, is they're going to look into potentially legal action against the commission for stopping his weight cut.
Yeah, I mean, there's always, apparently, when you hear people, the UFC always has these little side deals with guys. So who knows if they give, you know, Romero a nice little check, because he deserves it. He put on an amazing fight regardless of it, now knowing the weight cut issue. But it kind of screws him at the end of the day, because he's got two title shots. Both of them he missed weight on. Now there's talk. Now Dana wants to shoot him up to 205 with a possible Gustafson fight. I mean,
I'd watch it.
Crazy. But for point two, like, and knowing this would happen in the weigh-in.
Like, he's got, like, what's next? How can he get another title shot? Although a win over Gustafson gets him right to the top of the 205 ladder. Yeah.
I just think 205 is really big for him. If he's only point two off like that, and seeing some of those 205ers, they're massive. Like, Gustafson's huge.
Yeah.
Like, you got to look at that height advantage right there. That's crazy to deal with. Mm-hmm. Not only is it a thickness issue, when you go up in
a
weight class, it's a height.
More than 5 inches. Issue. So he's like 5'9", and Gustafson's like 6'4".
Yeah.
So that's like a 7-inch height
disadvantage. It's the height that's going to be the biggest issue, not necessarily the thickness and the weight size. Because Gustafson's monster. Look how tall he is. Like, that's crazy.
And let's face it, at 185 now, Romero's got like a bit of a climb. He'd have to beat probably Gastelum and Weidman. He'd have to probably beat Weidman again.
What do you think the next logical fight for Whitaker is?
So Whitaker says he thinks it's Weidman. I think it's Gastelum.
Yeah.
Because let's just look at the sample sizes here for a second. So I know that, you know, and Weidman said this, and this is a good point, but in his last four fights, he's 1-3. And Weidman says, well, you're looking at a sample that makes me look bad. So let's say in his last six, he's 3-3.
Yeah.
Okay, well, we'll give that to him. And he's beaten Gastelum.
Yeah, I think that's the question, why you want to get it to
since,
him.
Since Gastelum lost to him, he's beaten Bisping, who was the champion, who was the champion weeks prior, and Jacare, who was ranked ahead of Weidman.
Yeah.
So why, and this is the part that like boggles the mind with rankings and MMA math. It's like everybody thinks because he lost to him, he can never supplant him in the rankings? Yeah. Like, it makes no sense.
Yeah.
Yeah, why?
I think Gastelum's the fight.
I think so, too. I think it's actually a more fun matchup. It's two guys that are pretty similar in size, both that have moved up from 170. I actually think Gastelum would, and I was telling Gastelum this, I think Gastelum would match up well. Gastelum actually gave me a really good compliment.
Nice.
He said he thought that I weighed 165 pounds.
Hey.
And I said, he goes, you wear it well. I was like, I weigh like 143 pounds.
How did you guys even get into that conversation?
I was just chatting. I was, because I was, I somehow it came up that I was a guess your weight guy.
Because
he goes, I go,
we
what are you weighing?
That was last week.
So when I said to him, I go, what are you walking around at right now? Because, like, could you have made weight to fight, like, to replace Romero potentially? He goes, what do you think? And I go, I don't know, like 202. And he goes, yeah. I'm like just under 205. I'm like, I would have, you wouldn't have won a prize. And he goes, for real? You were a guess your weight guy? And he goes, let me guess how much you weigh. I go, okay. He goes, about 165. I'm like, well, thanks. Unless you think I'm getting tubby, you know, I'm not 165.
Maybe you're
he goes,
bulking.
Oh, you wear well, because I'm the same height as Gastelum, right?
Yeah. But apparently, like, he was offered the fight when Romero missed the point, too.
Well, that's
not... Is that true?
Well, yeah, it's not necessarily... From what I understand the case.
Okay.
What I like.
Those are some of the rumors flying around.
Here's the thing, though. Like, when he was 0.2, Gastelum would have had like 15 minutes to cut 20. He can't do it.
Yeah.
Can't cut 20. Because they can't, like, be like, okay, if Gastelum weighs in sometime today,
and now
it's like,
we'll
no,
give
this
him
is,
2 hours.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense.
Then give Romero the 2 hours.
And,
you know?
And you can't give Gastelum the 2 hours unless he's within 3 pounds. And he wouldn't have been within 3 pounds.
But now, if when you look at Romero, like, I saw videos of him walking, like, to go cut the extra weight. He didn't look great. Did the commission stop him because they thought health-wise he couldn't continue, right?
I think so. But they had cleared him to continue cutting weight.
And apparently doctors were sitting there watching the weight cut, giggling, not even stepping in. And then someone from the commission came in and stopped Romero.
Yeah, for
like
no
reason.
Like,
they had somewhere to go kind of thing.
Yeah,
right?
That's what they were saying. Is like,
that's the big
and they
rumor.
Started the weigh-ins early out of nowhere. They started them at 8:45. Like, luckily I was there, But Helwani got there and he's like, what's going on? Like 11 people had weighed in by 9 a.m. And like,
While you were there, was there a lot of buzz about this Dana White cutting the early weigh-ins?
Yes.
Because I know a lot of fighters, I mean, I'm sure it was a big debate while you were there.
Let's be honest about it. We can jump to that subject right now. It's a business decision. If you look at the numbers of how many people have missed weight in the morning between 9 a.m. and 11 a.m., the number is astronomical. From a business standpoint, it makes a ton of sense because all of these posters, and I said this to one of the UFC PR people, I go, I see these posters on Media Day and it says like Romero versus Whitaker, and I just get nervous.
Yeah.
Because so many of these promotions, like the promotions and the posters, they get thrown out the window and these guys miss weight.
Yeah.
So I know it's about professionalism, but at the same time, if you see statistically how many more people are missing weight in the morning and you're trying to run a viable business and you're putting tons of money into promotion, you're doing UFC countdown shows, you're doing UFC embedded, you're making these posters, you're making t-shirts, and one day before the fight,
these guys
are missing weight, and they're not. It's not a title fight, or they're being replaced. From a promotional standpoint, it is a nightmare, an absolute nightmare for these guys. So, unless you're going to move the weigh-ins to Thursday night instead of Friday night, and give these guys more time to rehydrate and replenish their brains, you're putting your business ahead of fighter safety, and that they just need to be honest with that and forthright with that, and they're not. Because I asked Dana, I said, "Is this a business decision?" And he said. He said, well, you know, statistically, the fighters all want to move it back to four, which I don't think is true.
No, from what I understand, the fighters want it early.
Well, Helwani was asking people if they want to move it back, and it was pretty much like a clean sweep. And I said, like, could there be some sort of hybrid? I said this to Dana White. Could there be some sort of hybrid where they weigh in any time up to the weigh-ins? And he raises a good point, like the commissions aren't going to stand around all day.
Yeah.
And
why not?
He's right.
It's their job.
It is their job.
Okay,
right.
Like the average person works 8 hours a day. Yeah. Like they can't work a full 8-hour day nine to five weigh in.
So when Romero missed weight, I sent an email to the commission saying how much of his purse is he forfeiting? And the head of the athletic commission goes, I'm going to forward you to our, I forwarded this to our public information officer. And I go, okay, when can I expect the reply? She goes, oh, they don't work weekends, so on Monday.
Yeah.
Thinking the fight's like, the fight's tonight.
Not,
like the fight's tomorrow night.
See, I don't get it. They the can't tonight, work an 8-hour shift sitting there, getting to socialize with UFC fighters. I'll sit there for an 8-hour day and just socialize with everybody. Come on.
Well, in fairness, the public information officer is a city job. It's not that necessarily.
No, but I'm saying for the commissioners who don't want to wait another half hour
they have
for
one
a fighter
event
to
every
make
like 3 years
Come
in the
on.
UFC. I agree.
I think
with
that's
you.
Bogus that that's
it's silly.
That the commission can't wait.
Yeah, that's take a day off during the week.
I told you, when I had one freak out in my weight cut experience, I had one freak out, and it was in LA. I had to make 160, which for me was crazy. I always fought at 170 or 165. I was so, the commission in LA was over 2 hours late for us to weigh in, and I cut that extra weight, so I started freaking. At one point, I was throwing chairs around, I was snapping, like, I was
losing it. You're not yourself at that point.
No, I'm totally lost. I'm like, this is ridiculous. You can't make someone who just cut all this weight wait for 2 hours. What the heck were you doing? Like, this is your job.
And that's why I'm okay with
time.
Them starting it early. Like if they have 11 fighters sitting in the hallway, what, you're going to wait for the media? It's like, let them weigh in, sure.
If TSN tells you to come at 10 o'clock, you're here at 10 o'clock because it's your job. You're
a professional. Well, not you. You're here at 9:45.
I know. I'm here early. 15 minutes early always. So to me, it stresses me out when I do something like that and I'm the one making weight. Commission's got to be on time. Like, you can't make these guys wait. If the fighters are doing their job, you guys do your job.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to say this, and it's going to be polarizing, and I'm probably the only member of the media that would say this, but from a promotional standpoint, I agree with them moving the weigh-ins back.
From the promotional standpoint.
Because statistically, way more fighters are missing weight with these morning weigh-ins, and they have a business to run.
Yeah.
Again, this isn't the sport. This isn't the Olympics.
I don't know what these fighters are doing.
It's a business.
As a fighter, you should be looking at this as an advantage, being like, okay, like I have an extra 6 hours to rehydrate before my fight. Why wouldn't you want 6 extra hours? All it means is a little bit of
The fighters are all on board, but they have nobody to be upset with. Then, you know, the only people they should be upset with are each other.
Yeah,
because so many athletes have blown it.
But you have to look at
I'm going to pull up the numbers while you're talking.
Yeah, but those who miss weight, like, they can't ruin it for everybody just because, you know, a handful can't make it. You know, I think it's sad that, you know, a lot of the scientific guys, the guys who know how beneficial it is to get that extra 6 hours. I mean, come on. Like, it's not fair.
Yeah, I agree.
It's not fair.
I mean, it isn't fair, but I think the other fighters have blown it for each other.
But, I mean, Angela Hill, I saw talking about the same idea you had with having the whole day to weigh in. So I think that makes the most sense, Aaron. You nailed it. I think that's the one that we got to go with.
Okay, so here, this is an article from Mike Bond on MMA Junkie, another Toronto guy. It's from earlier this month at the two-year anniversary of the morning weigh-in. So let's take a look at the...
It's been 2 years?
Yeah, so the previous weigh-in system from 2014 to 2016... 83 total events, 950 fights, 32 fighters missed weight. The new system, June 3rd, 2016 to May 31st, 2018, 82 events, 962 fights, 62 fighters missed weight. So nearly double with only 12 more fights.
Yeah.
Those are the numbers.
Yeah.
And it's crazy. And the average weigh-in miss was 2.9 pounds.
I'm trying to think, what would the reasoning be? Is it my understanding is they probably wake up a little too late to make weight for 10. A lot of them maybe have to wake up at like 6 a.m. to cut all that weight. But I don't understand why guys aren't doing the two cuts.
And it keeps them up all night.
About like, two cuts. But you do a little cut, a little sauna, a little Epsom salt bath before you go to bed.
I think a lot of them
do
that.
And then you do a little bit again in the morning. You shouldn't need, even if you wake up at, 7 o'clock, you don't need more than 3 hours to cut maybe 3, 4 pounds, 5 pounds. Well, anything more than that, you're not being professional
about
as an athlete.
Let's say you're Yoel Romero, and you're fighting at like 1 a.m. the next night. So you have to wake up at like 5 a.m. the morning before to start cutting weight. That's going to mess with your whole sleep rhythm.
Yeah, but I'm sure he would want that extra time, though.
Especially him. He would want that extra time.
So, I mean, it's just part of the job.
To me, they should look at Thursday nights. And just on fight day, they should weigh the fighters again on fight day and say, you need to be within a certain range.
Yeah.
That's all it is. Like, because then you have far more optimal brain rehydration. So Thursday nights. The problem with Thursdays is they do media day, so it's tough for people to cut while they're doing media. So you have to maybe do media day the following day, on the Friday, the day before the fight, when they're all rehydrating. So let's say you do weigh-ins at 4 p.m. on Thursdays, even 6 p.m. on Thursday, something like that. You don't need to rent the venue for the Fridays because, you can rent the venue the Thursday night, or you can do it at another venue Thursday night. I don't think people care that much about these public weigh-ins, but people show up, so whatever. So you do public weigh-ins somewhere on the Thursday night. They weigh in 4 o'clock. They have 2 hours. They step on the scale like the ceremonial weigh-ins that they do now. Weigh in, if you miss weight or whatever, you miss weight. Same as currently. But let's say a fighter misses weight or the commission stops them cutting weight because it's unhealthy and pulls them from the fight. Now they've got 48 hours to find a replacement. So it's a lot easier to find a replacement. The fighters have more time to rehydrate their brains. They get to do an afternoon weigh-in, again, statistically, it seems to be doing better. And then you just do media on the Friday.
But I just think that's encouraging guys to want to cut more weight then because they have more time to recover.
But then on the Saturday, you weigh them. You hope they might do a second weigh-in. Or you just monitor their weight throughout.
Now, can you tell me, everyone's talking about this 1FC style of weigh-in. Do you know what the actual... protocol is
let me
for
pull
them.
It like I know a lot about it, but let me pull it
because
up just,
I've heard of things, but I don't know enough exactly. But a lot of people say that is the way to solve this, and I just want to know what the exact protocol or what requirements they do for their guys.
Sure. Okay. So they're pretty much required to compete at their walk around weight. They try to completely eliminate weight cutting. So they use an instrument to test their urine. To make sure that they're not overly dehydrated. Okay. They're tested multiple times a week for weight and hydration during fight week. Failure to achieve the adequate levels result in an additional event day testing. So basically the system and they have to stay on weight. So the system keeps them from dropping a significant amount of weight and putting on a lot of weight. It's just a week-long test.
Actual weigh-in kind of thing?
No, they still weigh them in. They still do a weigh-in. Yeah. But throughout the week, they make sure that they're on or close to weight, that they're not dehydrated, and that they're not in a spot where they've cut a ton of weight.
Yeah.
So, okay. And it's a much smarter system.
Yeah.
The weight cutting thing is honestly barbaric, in my opinion. It's just to me, it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
You're basically fighting twice that week.
But it's become a big part of the game now. It's become an advantage. It's become a huge part of it that we can't.
Like things change. Change it. The fighters would probably prefer not to cut weight. It's like again, it's like fighting twice in 1 week.
Sometimes, though, like talking to a lot of fighters, some of the fighters like to lose weight because it forces them to put that extra time in conditioning.
Yeah, I know Elias Theodoro likes it. He's like, says, man, it's like a spiritual experience for him.
Guys might, you know, come in out of shape. Maybe, you know, it might improve conditioning. And in some cases, it might decrease people's conditioning in the ring. So, I don't know, man. I think this will always be an issue no matter what we do.
Yeah, again, it's just trying to fix a problem. That's all. And it's tough. There's not really an easy answer. Yeah. But I think that moving it to back to Friday, the ceremonial weigh-ins, is detrimental to the fighters, but it's also good for the promotion. Like, you got to look at it both ways. This isn't...
But I think this is where you need, like, a players association, right?
Because you hit the nail on the head.
Yeah, because this is where I think maybe on when they have the summits, the UFC summit, all the fighters, this is something that I think it shouldn't be Dana White's decision. I think it should be a voice of the fighters.
They've got to band together, but they aren't.
I know, but it should be a vote during the UFC fighter summit. Let the guys put a ballot in, because that's
they're
who...
They're not going to do that Dana unless
White. It's not Dana White cutting weight. It's not the commission cutting weight. It's the fighters.
Well,
like
Dan Ige, I interviewed him after his win, and he has a kinesiology degree, and was saying basically like he was the first fight on the card. So even at the morning weigh-ins, he only has 25 hours to rehydrate his brain when really you need 48. So if he was fighting, he would have only had 25 hours to rehydrate if it would have been ceremonial weigh-ins as opposed to the whatever more than 30 that he had.
Yeah, because it's the first fight.
This is the first fight.
Yep.
So. And these are all great points, but I think that people need to look at it from the like from the promotional standpoint. I hate to say it, but these guys have a business to run, and if you're going to throw all of these promotional materials that you've worked so hard on out the window, and you've been promoting fights, you've been flying fighters out to markets to do interviews on morning television and do all these different things, like it's hard for them to run their business in a reliable fashion. And you're also losing money at the gate if a main event gets canceled.
But there is a sports side to it, you know. As much of it's a business, and we always go back and forth. There is no business without the athletes, you know. So I mean, you got to make your workers happy. Like, why don't we just all work in sweatshops?
But
right?
But there also are no athletes without the business.
Yeah.
At least high paid athletes, even though they're not incredibly high paid. But the sport needs a platform to.
I know.
And the UFC is that platform. I don't think that Dana White is being completely forthright when he says all the fighters want to move it back to 4 o'clock.
Yeah, no, I don't think that's true.
Because
my understanding, everyone I've heard talking about it is upset.
They're like, fighter after
and
the event.
And they all said they want their own weigh-in.
And Holly Holm said, well, why don't we just do it at noon?
Like,
if it's the morning that's the issue, why don't we do it from like 11 to 1?
Fair, try it.
That's good also. Another good solution.
But that just might mean the guys might sleep an extra hour.
Exactly.
And
still miss weight.
Still the same issue that we're going to have.
Yeah. The afternoon actually makes a lot of sense, but in my mind, I think Thursday afternoon is better. And I've spoken to somebody who is kind of on the inside of the health and nutrition side of the UFC, and they said the biggest issue with Thursday night weigh-ins is that fighters will bulk up too much, and you know there will be lopsided fights.
Yeah, probably.
The fighter who is
probably a little bit more responsible, only cutting 10 to 12 pounds, is going to be in a disadvantage now. Now the guys are going to be even heavier. So I mean, just there's always an issue, no matter what.
There certainly is.
Yeah,
and that's the problem.
Yeah,
but. I think I'm in the minority when I say that I think that going back to the afternoon weigh-ins makes a lot of sense. Yeah. I know it doesn't for the athletes, and
I'm looking at it from an athlete standpoint, and if I was, you know, competing in the UFC, I would want the early weigh-in, hands down. No questions asked.
Yeah, and it seems that's the majority.
Yeah.
So UFC 225, it was a really good night, I think, for emerging talent. We saw Covington win the interim belt, tied to Ivasa with another win, this time over a former champion. Mirsad Bektik beating the best opponent that he's beaten to date in Ricardo Lamas. Sergio Pettis was still only 24 inches his way towards the title shot. It was nice to see a lot of these younger guys, and of course Whitaker getting a win. A lot of these younger guys continue their ascent, which is great.
Like, I mean, Sergio Pettis, you mean beating Benavidez is just
huge. Benavidez has lost to Dominic Cruz and Demetrius Johnson, and that's it.
It's crazy to see, you know, little Sergio Pettis do such big things that night. I think that's probably one of the biggest upsets that happened that night.
Oh, yeah, I think so. I think it was the biggest upset because there aren't a lot of underdogs that won. I'm actually looking at it, and there are none other than him.
Charles Oliveira, quick
work. He was a favorite. Dan Ige was a favorite, but, albeit a small one.
Yeah, and Rashad Evans getting KO'd.
Chris De La Roca was like a mild underdog, but it was pretty much even money when that fight hit. So it's interesting.
So Rashad Evans called it quits?
That's the rumor. Apparently, he told Dana White that he was probably going to retire, and that's the right move. Yeah. He's lost, what, 5 in a row now?
Yeah, Anthony Smith is just beast, too.
Oh, man.
You know, he's just he looks strong.
Huge at 205.
Oh, yeah, he's a monster.
Says he's going to stay there. It's like Sam Alvey. He moved up to 205. These are guys that cut weight to make 185. It was a tough cut for them, but they hit a lot harder. These are guys that are known for hitting.
Yeah.
So move up.
Yeah,
Anthony, be healthier. And same with even Dos Anjos was, you know, what he was doing before this fight at welterweight, and he actually looked bigger than Covington in the cage. You know, he's benefited. And same with Whitaker. Yeah. Whitaker moved up too. So yeah. It just goes to show.
Yeah, Gaslam's that same guy staying there, is doing well.
Even Holm right now, 145, beating Megan Anderson.
Yeah.
She says she wants to go back to 135.
Megan Anderson
though.
Looked huge, man. She looked
person,
like a monster.
The first time I saw her during workouts, I was like, oh my God.
Yeah, and she's like 6'1". Holm is like in phenomenal shape. Yeah, like Holm's nice, tall, good muscular physique. Yeah.
But Holm's only about my height. She's not that much taller.
Really? Yeah, but when you saw Anderson she looks tall,
she's like
long
6'1".
Limbs, like...
Yeah.
The length of her femurs and like her elbows were long.
She's a legit
like,
45.
Yeah, she looked good.
Yeah, and like, she looked good in the first round.
Yeah, in the first round, but
she knocked Holly down.
That
I was surprised that Holly won that
her
round.
Frame is going to give a lot of girls in the UFC a tough time.
One other thing I obviously want to discuss is CM Punk. So, like, just from your perspective, you've worked with a lot of martial artists over the years. He's a guy that's now 0-2 in the UFC. I think he still wants to compete. But what can he do? If you're CM Punk, you're a big star. They just paid you $500,000 or something like that to fight against Mike Jackson. You're not going to get another shot in the UFC. That's for sure.
Yeah.
So what do you do if you love the sport and you still want to compete? Where does he go from here?
I think it's at his age, at his time, his performance. He fought at the peak. I think it's just train and enjoy the game, man.
That's what I was thinking too.
Just train and have fun as a martial artist. Learn your jiu-jitsu. Maybe do some jiu-jitsu tournaments if you want here and there, but. Yeah,
I think part of him likes the spotlight.
But I mean, if you're fighting for that long, like you're training for 6 years and that's the type of performance you bring, like, I'm sorry, like, it's just the game's not for you.
I have a great idea for how you can give CM Punk another fight in the UFC. Are you interested?
Are you going to step up?
Well,
and you train with me?
I don't know about that. Although, you know, I'm a younger guy than CM Punk.
Yeah.
Except right now my shin's
better
messed
training
up, so can't
with
do
me.
It.
Yeah. Me versus Duke in the corner.
Yeah. I said to Mike Jackson's corner, to his team, I was like, they keep talking about how CM Punk has all this elite training. I'm like, you guys trained Derek Lewis. Like, it's not like you guys are bums.
And he had, who was it? Pat Miletich in his
corner. Yeah, Pat Miletich was in his corner too. Yeah. So, basically, this is what you do with CM Punk if you want to give him another fight in the UFC. You ready?
Let's hear it.
The Celebrity Ultimate Fighter.
Yeah. Yeah,
you get
okay
a bunch of celebrities
it.
In the house that weigh around 170.
Yeah.
You get them.
I don't
it doesn't matter
it.
What the weight is. It could do a catch weight. Do 180.
He'd definitely be the favorite then at this point.
Well, you
I
never
guess.
Know. Yeah. There could be somebody who emerges on the show.
But you think about it. Like, someone was asking me the other day, and I
imagine
was like,
CM Punk versus The Situation from the Jersey Shore.
Yeah, I'm actually watching. I like the Jersey Shore.
So you can watch it.
There you go.
That would be a fight people would be interested in.
Yeah.
Listen, let's not take this sport too seriously.
Yeah.
It's okay to have these kind of exhibition fights. You know, like, I thought this fight was interesting to watch, and I was saying this because, well, I was watching it with Casey Layton, who does jiu-jitsu. He's the videographer for MMA fighting, and he was saying, oh, well, here's what they should be doing and all that. He was kind of assessing it as it was happening, and so was I, as somebody who's taking martial arts now. It was interesting to watch guys that aren't the finished product, really, that are still learning things all the time. You could see what they were doing wrong, what they could have done better, because you're used to watching it, and then you realize, well, these guys that are currently in the UFC are amazing. Like, they have this instinct of what they should do.
But the big issue was it shouldn't have been on the pay-per-view. Put it on the fight
No, I
pass,
disagree with you. It should
be
on the pay-per-view.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. That's what the criticism is.
But why? Who cares? Yeah. More people watch Blades and Overeem on TV.
The value of, you know, the whole value of you're paying for a service and you want
to
see
the
best.
And you're paying to see CM Punk.
Five fights, yeah.
There are people probably that would pay just to see CM Punk.
I agree.
And they wouldn't have paid just to see Curtis Blades.
Yeah.
Like, people aren't not buying the pay-per-view because Blades and Overeem
is not
a, was a fantastic fight.
Yeah.
I'm not trying to diminish Blades and Overeem. I just don't think that it's a big deal to them,
yeah,
whether they're on the main card or not. I don't think they care. I think they'd rather have the eyeballs on TV.
Yeah, but even the scene, like I was hearing Rogan talk about it. He seemed very upset about that fight happening, and a lot of people are just not happy that that quality of fight was put on such a high platform. It's like
they're running a business.
Yeah.
Like,
but we're talking about it regardless. So
yeah, they're running a business, and it's kind of a circus fight, and it's an attraction. Mm-hmm. And I don't think Dana White doesn't seem like he wants to do something like that again.
But like, I bet you, like, this is what I was saying before to someone. Like, if you would have put, like, say, a 185-pound receiver from the NFL, you give him 1 month, I still bet you he beats CM Punk.
Yeah, just because of sheer
just
athleticism.
Just because of sheer athletic. That's what he's missing. Like, on top of having a fight IQ, a good team, you got to have something that makes you a fighter, that gives you that heart, that training. He just doesn't have it.
Yeah. And he likes doing it, and I think more power to him.
Hey, he's made it. Enjoy it.
Yeah, he's had fun doing it, and he got to do it on a big stage and got to use his name and his profile to get into the UFC, which is, I don't have a big problem with it. I honestly don't.
Would you have a problem if we saw him back again, or would you be
for it? If it was for the Celebrity Ultimate Fighter, like, I don't want him fighting legit martial artists.
Would you? What about the Contender Series? Is it worth putting him on a Contender Series? Is it worth doing? No.
No.
That's it.
No.
Celebrity or gone.
Okay, so if you put him on Contender Series, who's he going to fight? Like a guy that's 3-0 on the regional scene? The guy will kill him.
Yeah, still.
That will crush him.
Yeah.
Mike Jackson's 0-1 as a professional. Yeah. That's the kind of fighter he should be fighting. And Mike Jackson has been competing in martial arts and boxing and kickboxing for 10 years, so he's already way ahead of CM Punk in the game.
Let's talk about what Dana said for a sec here. Like, I don't understand. People are mad at Jackson for not finishing the fight.
Yeah.
Like, I mean,
it's ridiculous.
Like, they wanted him to go in and blow the fight out. Where he was saying afterwards, he's like, well, I wanted to go 3 rounds. If I couldn't finish him, he's like, I wanted to showcase, get as much time as I want. Like, he was saying he didn't want to give CM Punk CTE. He's talking about not wanting to give him further brain damage.
And he was also saying, like, if I take too many risks, if I get caught, like, I'm the guy who lost to CM Punk.
Yeah.
Which is true. Like, that is risky.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's
that would be what he's known as. You can either be known as the guy who beat CM Punk or the guy who lost to CM Punk. Yeah. Those are the only two choices for Mike Jackson.
So you think Jackson should have went in and finished the fight? What's your take?
No, who cares?
Yeah,
really. If he wants to lay on top of him and play it safe and beat him that way, or
that's the way I look
I would have liked to see him let CM Punk up and just piece him apart a little bit on the feet a little bit more and showcase that part of his game, because on the ground it seemed like he knew what he was doing, but it just wasn't exciting.
Well.
I loved covering Mike Jackson and CM Punk this week. They were both great to deal with.
Yeah.
And CM Punk was giving such honest answers.
He's a super nice guy.
He is a very nice guy and a very smart guy, a very cerebral guy, and a very honest guy. So these are all things that you want from people that you're interviewing. And not to mention, like, because he's not in the UFC that often and doesn't get interviewed that often, he's just better at interviews because he's not as annoyed that he's doing interviews.
Yeah, and he's that WWE side to him, he's probably so comfortable on a mic as well. Like, it's probably... Man's just—he's just not built for it. Some of us are, some of us aren't. It's just it's the way it is. Like it's like, hey, could we just go up and show in and play in an NFL game? No, I can't. Like, I mean,
might be able to be a punter.
Yeah,
in the NFL.
I could.
There you go.
I know I could.
You put your mind to it.
Yeah, I did pretty good. I'm telling you, I was pretty good. If I would have started young, for sure. Thank you.
Yeah.
If I started young, for sure. Like, I just jumped on and I kicked footballs. I was pretty good. I kicked a 50-yard field goal, like my first week of ever kicking a field goal. I kicked a 50-yarder in practice.
You probably could have made the NFL.
Yeah, I practiced with the Argos a few times. And I just no teaching,
you just
no
knew
cringing.
Because
I kicked from Taekwondo from such a young age that my hip strength
actually translates.
For me, it did. Hmm. The coach literally says, "Okay, Joe, take 2 steps back, 2 to the left, and kick." So he kept moving me. I was putting them through, and then after practice, like, "All right, let's go." He took me to the register office, and he got me like eligible to play.
Really?
I played for York that Saturday against York that Saturday.
Wow!
Yeah, that was it.
And what made you decide to just go out and try doing this?
Because I was a soccer player too, right? I kicked it, and the UFT soccer team had like 70 people trying for 3 spots or something.
Yeah.
I knew the coach, and he was like, "Listen, he's like, you won't play the first few years." Then my buddy in phys ed, he was like, "Hey, man, we need a football kicker." And I was like, "You want to try?" I was like, "Sure." I tried it, and it was good. And then, boom, 5 years playing UFT.
That's amazing.
Kicker and punter, just like that.
That's just amazing.
Yeah, that was it.
You really are a marvel of science, Joe.
Yeah, I loved it.
Yeah, I think you could have at least made the CFL if you would have
CFL,
stuck with it.
Yeah, NFL is a little bit different. But, I mean, CFL, I think I could have. If I would have started in high school, for sure.
That's crazy. Yeah. Do you think you could still do it now?
I bet you I could. I could. Now it's okay. A challenge. Now I feel like I want to kick some footballs now.
Cool.
See if I can still do it.
I just got a text from Ariel Helwani. I asked him to do the show yesterday. He said no, and now he's saying yes. So I should. You want to talk to Ariel?
It doesn't matter.
Oh, okay. Let's see. I'll see if he's free now. You free now? Well, let's continue our conversation. If he says yes, we'll patch him in. Let's talk about Colby Covington. I think that he really put on a show. This is a guy that talks a lot. People thought that he was going to lose.
And he backed it up.
Yeah, he backed it up. And I thought that he really did a good job of dealing with RDA.
And yeah, for sure he did.
Yeah.
But I felt RDA maybe looked a little flat. He didn't look his explosive self as much. Maybe he was trying to pace himself early, and then that pace of Colby got too much for him.
It could have been an emotional thing where he really was like, there's more pressure on it when you're mad, and you wanna like...
I didn't see that explosiveness, that extra snap and that firepower in him.
Well, if you want to see how impressive Covington is, just go back and watch Dos Santos versus Lawler and say, this is the guy that Colby Covington just beat.
Yeah, Colby, man, I don't know. He's the real deal. So
yeah. And he's talking. He ripped Canadians at the end.
Yeah,
he called George St. Pierre a syrup sucker.
Oh yeah,
and
yeah.
I said, and
that
I
was
said
in your interview with
him.
Right?
I go, in fairness, the syrup is great, and he goes, in fairness, the syrup sucks, and so does Canada.
Oh, all right.
So there we go. He's Donald Trump's upset with Canada, and he's a Trump supporter, so maybe that's why he's starting to give Canada the business.
Yeah, hey, it'll be good. Woodley, I know Woodley's hyped up, and that's a side of Woodley we haven't seen. He's coming out in interviews saying how
he's freaking out.
You know, I'm going to end his career. I've never wanted to do this. Like, man, Colby might be the guy that makes Woodley that big star.
Well, that's exactly it. Like, for years, Woodley has been wanting this money fight. I want this money fight. I need a guy that's going to, you know, I want Diaz. I want GSP. Now, suddenly, organically,
he's got that
a guy
soccer.
Who he was ignoring was Covington. He's like, oh, Covington's not, he's no good, blah, blah, blah. Covington gets the interim belt, and now he starts paying attention to him, and now you can build this into a fight that people care about.
Yeah.
It becomes like, not only is it a feud, but it also becomes like a cultural thing, because you're talking about, a guy that's kind of like Team Trump. It's somebody who's kind of on the other side of the spectrum when it comes to politics.
Yeah,
and
he needs it. That's like Jose Aldo when he got Connor.
You need your Huckleberry. Boom. You need somebody like that.
So, I mean, it's good. I think I'm hyped for the fight.
Yeah.
So I'm excited for it.
I can't wait to see it.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm even excited to watch the countdowns for it and the embeds. Like, I think it's just going to be a good show.
Yeah. They should do a tour like they did with Aldo. And, like, honestly, you can build this thing into whatever you want to build
especially it into. Especially with the history of them training together. You have Colby saying, like, I smashed Woodley every round we did in training. And then you have it, Woodley saying the opposite. So, I mean... That little bit of heat, the attention, it just builds for good fights.
All right, well, before we continue our conversation, let's bring in Ariel Helwani. I wanted to talk to him about his last week with MMA fighting, what it means, and him going to ESPN. So he joins us now on the TSN MMA show.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's time to introduce this week's guest.
All right, we're now joined by Ariel Helwani, a man who needs no introduction. If you're listening to this show, I have a feeling you know who he is. So thanks for joining us, Ariel.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me. I'm a big fan of the podcast, so it's an honor.
I know you send listener feedback every week, and we really do appreciate it.
Yes, of course. Anytime I can support Canadian martial arts, I'm happy to do it. You guys do a great job.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. So this is, I guess, your last week at MMA Fighting. I wanted to touch base about that and talk to you about... Really, this is the house that Ariel built. You know, I don't want to diminish all the other great people that worked at MMA Fighting, but it's really a website that's become synonymous with you. And how hard is this? I mean, how hard is it for you to walk away from something that you've really worked so hard to build? I mean, you talk about the MMA Beat, the MMA Hour. These are really staples of people that really consume the content related to the sport.
Yeah, it's been very difficult, and it's been like a range of emotions that I felt over the last few months, because on the one hand, it has always been my dream to work at ESPN. Since before I even knew what mixed martial arts was in the early 90s, I remember, I grew up in Canada. I grew up watching TSN. There was only one sports network in Canada, and I loved all things TSN. I loved watching Sports Desk before it became known as SportsCenter. I loved all the anchors, Jim Van Horn, et cetera. But I always kind of grew up as more of an American sports fan, I remember in 1993 when the Canadians were playing in Game 5 of the Stanley Cup Final, the game which they won, the Stanley Cup Final against the Kings. I chose to watch Game 1 of the NBA Finals between the Bulls and the Suns. I was just a huge NBA fan, and I was a baseball fan, a football fan, and hockey was kind of like fourth for me. So when I found out that there was something called ESPN that covered things like the NBA a little more than back then, in the early 90s in Canada, I was smitten by it, and I wanted at an early age to work in broadcasting, and I wanted to work there. So it's still, I haven't started yet. I started in a couple of days. It still doesn't even feel real that this is happening, and so I'm so excited. But on the other hand, as you mentioned, I've been working with MMA fighting for 9 years, dating back to when it was just MMA Fan House at AOL, and then they purchased the URL MMA Fighting, and then in 2011, SB Nation bought it. And I've poured everything into it, and it will always be a part of me. And I truly love the people who work there, and I'm comfortable there, and I have a good thing. And so it was very difficult, I won't lie. And that's why I was very emotional on Monday. I'm still emotional, and I don't want to get emotional again. It's just hard to say goodbye to something that is, you know, that is so important to you. But I feel like this is a good time, and I would just regret it for the rest of my life if I didn't take this opportunity now.
There's also a level of comfort that comes with being able to do what you know you're capable of, and also having a lot of editorial input. Is that going to, do you think, carry over to ESPN? They're going to give you, you know, a lot of carte blanche editorially, especially with your Monday show?
You know, I don't know if carte blanche is the right word. You are right, though. You know, with MMA Fighting, I mean, it was, if there's something, you know, even better than carte blanche, that's what I had. I've never had an idea turned down. They really trusted me. And I'd like to think that the vast majority of my ideas ended up being successes. MMA Hour, MMA Beat, all the video coverage that we've done. I mean, there was none of that before I started. And, of course, now there's amazing people who were able to make it better and, you know, able to evolve it and carry it forward. So yeah, that was a great luxury. And so I don't know what to expect. I really don't. It's been a while since I changed jobs. I've had jobs come and go, but that, you know, that site has always been my one constant. And that's what also, you know, makes this a little difficult, because I've been through a lot over the last few years, all kinds of drama, and they've always stood by me. And I like to think that I'm a very loyal guy, and I never really dreamed. There was only one place I would have ever left that site for, and it was ESPN. My contract is up, so my contract expires actually tomorrow, and I didn't go around shopping myself. I didn't, you know, talk to different websites or things like that. I really just wanted to either stay there or go work at ESPN. You know, I got the opportunity, and I just felt like it was the right time. So what it's going to be like, what the lay of the land is like, what the freedom is like, I don't know. I'm open to anything. They have amazing people working there as well. And, I mean, they are the worldwide leader for a reason. So I'm just excited to see what it's like on that side of the fence.
And I imagine this is going to differ greatly from the role that you had with Fox Sports back in the day.
Oh, yes. That is a very important distinction to make. Look, I learned a lot working at Fox. I can't say I have many fond memories of my time there. Made a couple of good friends. It certainly ended on a very sour note. And the lessons that I learned there will stay with me forever. But, you know, I already know, even before working for ESPN, that it is a completely different place, with different values and just different objectives. So I'm already very comfortable with how things went. As I've said, I think on my show, when I signed with ESPN, I had no idea, absolutely no idea, that they were about to sign the UFC. And I won't lie, given my my past, I was a little concerned initially. But I have been assured by incredible people who I've met, and some of them I haven't even met face-to-face yet, just via email, that this is a different place, this is a different time, and that it's not, you know, it's not the same situation. So I'm very comfortable with that. And you know, look, if this was any other sport, you end up at a place just by chance that ended up acquiring, you know, the TV rights, you would consider yourself the luckiest man in the world. I mean, what are the chances that you just backed into this? Of course, our sport is a little different. But now that I've, you know, had the discussions and I've been assured, and I'm 100%, you know, being paid by ESPN for all things, and there's no conflicts there, I feel lucky that that things turned out the way they did.
And how will your role change in terms of on-site coverage? And is there a chance that you end up interviewing Dana White again, or do you think that that's probably something you want to stay, that you would want to stay away from?
Well, so right now my duties are, I will continue doing a show on Mondays that will look very similar to the show that I used to do on Mondays. I mean, obviously it will be in a different studio. It will have a different name. The name is just a very simple name, Ariel Helwani's MMA Show. But it will air live. There will be video. You can download it afterwards. It will be at the same time. A lot of people are telling me, like, I don't know what to do. You're gone. I'm like, I'll be back in a couple weeks. You'll just have to, like, subscribe to another feed, and it's going to be very similar. So don't worry about that. That was very important to not only myself but to ESPN, believe it or not. They really did not want to tinker with the show at all. So we'll see how it ends up and how it ends up looking. Of course, it's going to look a little different, but you know, I'm at peace with that. And then I'll also be doing a show on Wednesdays with Chael Sonnen called Ariel and the Bad Guy, and that will just be me and him sort of talking about the news of the week and whatnot. That will be available on ESPN Plus. So for now, that's behind the sort of, you know, $4.99 paywall. And as of right now, I think that's only available in the United States. But again, I want to reiterate, the show on Monday is available to the world. I know a lot of people were concerned about that, and also, behind no paywall. It's the same thing as it is now. It's free. And then at the events, we'll be doing a pre-show, usually after the weigh-ins, and then a live post-show. I believe those will be on ESPN Plus, and there might be instances where there's, you know, coverage on digital or SportsCenter, things like that. We will be interviewing people, winners, and things of that nature. The topic of, you know, whether we would interview Dana or not hasn't been brought up. And as I've said a bunch of times, you know, there is no beef on this side of the table. I do believe, you know, if anyone should hold a grudge, I feel like it should be me because, you know, jobs were taken away from me, you know, salaries were taken away from me, but I don't hold a grudge. I don't view Dana in that light. He's a subject matter. He's a promoter. He's a very influential guy. And by the way, he's a guy who for many years did a lot of great things for me and gave me a lot of time and access. So I hold no grudge. I have said to people who work with him that I am open to speaking, to talking, to sitting down, to clearing the air. I think this is all just, you know, maybe a misunderstanding or, you know, quite frankly, a little bit silly. Whether he's open to that or not now, I don't know. And I guess we're just going to cross that bridge. But, you know, I haven't had a private conversation with him in over 2 years. And, you know, nothing's really changed as far as my career is concerned. And I'm thankful for that. So whether or not we can speak to him, it would be great. But I don't feel like it will hinder, you know, my ability to do my job as well as possible.
Have you ever reached out to him personally? Like, have you ever sent him a text message saying, give me a call, let's figure this out, or no? Or do you feel like that's not really
responsibility? I've never sent a personal text, but I've told, you know, people very close to him how I feel, pretty much what I just told you. So, you know, again, I didn't do anything wrong. And so, you know, I'm not the one who did anything wrong. There's nothing I have to apologize for. It's just, I really pride myself on trying to have the best relationships as possible with everyone. Like, I'm the kind of person, if I find out that a fighter or a manager or a coach is mad at me, I will reach out to them and I won't like tweet back and forth. I will call them up. I will text them. I'll say, can we speak? Because I really want to have as good a relationship as possible. Now, I know in our role, sometimes people are not going to like you. Sometimes they're going to get mad. You know, this stuff comes and goes all the time. But luckily, throughout my career, these issues have happened and they've gone away. This is one that's public that, you know, that for some reason hasn't gone away just yet. But I feel pretty confident that over time, you know, especially now in the era that we're in, and after, you know, the company was sold. I mean, Dana and Lorenzo and Frank, they won. You know, they deserve an incredible amount of credit for what they were able to do to turn, you know, something from $2 million to $4 billion, $4-plus billion is just an incredible feat, unlike anything we've seen in sports. So they won, and I feel like, you know, it would be nice to bury the hatchet. But if he doesn't want to, again, it's not something that I, like, really think about. I mean, look, at the press conferences, you've seen me. I ask questions. He answers them. What more could I ask for? You know, as long as I'm able to cover the events, have a credential, do my job, provide for my family, what am I losing out on? The one-on-ones were phenomenal. They were incredible. But, you know, he's not obligated to speak to me. But as long as, you know, I ask questions at press conference, he answers them, and it's not made a big deal, I really can't complain. So it's really not something that I worry about too much.
Yeah, absolutely. And just for clarification, when you talk about coverage of these events, will you be doing that from a studio, or will you be on site, or will it just vary from event to event?
It will vary, but from what I'm told, and I'll have a better sense, you know, quite soon, but for the big pay-per-views, you know, like the number of pay-per-views that I attended for MMA Fighting, it will be on site.
Oh, cool. And then you might be in studio for, like, the smaller Fight Night card that you normally wouldn't have attended anyways.
Exactly.
Cool.
I'm happy with going to, you know, a pay-per-view a month and a half. In fact, prior to 225, I was in Chicago. I saw you there. The last event that I traveled to was in March, 222, because 223 was in Brooklyn, and I didn't go to Rio. So I had, like, 3 months. I don't know when the last time was that I didn't have to get on a plane for 3 months. And I have to say, it was pretty damn awesome.
Yeah, it's not bad, right? Yeah. I'm in the same boat. I didn't go to 222. I went to 223. But, it was nice to be able to tell my wife, you know, I'm going to be home February, March, April. Or February, April, yeah. May, or whatever.
Yep. I enjoyed it. But, I mean, like, the big events, there's nothing like being there, right? And Saturday was the same. 226, same thing. So I enjoy when it's a big event, when it feels big being there.
I've got to say, 225 was the most fun I've had covering an event in a long time. I had just a great time this past week in Chicago. It was a lot of fun. And just dealing with the whole thing with CM Punk and Mike Jackson, both of them are great guys, and it was just something different, which I liked.
Exactly. That's the thing. It felt like that card had something for everyone. If you're into the story of CM Punk and Mike Jackson, that was for you. If you're a traditionalist, And you know, you obviously like the way the sport has been structured for so long. Whitaker and Romero doesn't get any better than that. You know, you have the drama of Colby Covington, Holly Holm, Megan Anderson. I mean, we go down through the whole thing. There was really something for everyone. And then, of course, you have all the drama of Friday. Not something that I hope for, but, you know, as a journalist, it's good to be there to be able to report on that stuff and be on the scene. So It honestly felt like the whole week flew by because it felt like there was so much going on every day.
Yeah, I felt the same way. It seemed like a roller coaster. That's a good segue to what I want to ask you about next, which is the weigh-ins. You did kind of an informal poll among the athletes of who liked the morning weigh-ins versus the afternoon weigh-ins, and it seemed the consensus was morning weigh-ins. I'm actually kind of alone here. I actually think that moving back to the afternoon weigh-ins from a promotional and business standpoint is the right move to make. I know that from a health standpoint, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense. If it was up to me, I'd say do it Thursday nights rather than Friday nights. But looking at the numbers and thinking about how much money they pour into promotion for these events, for the countdown shows, the posters, the amount of money that they blow because somebody has left, you know, stepped away from this card and won't be competing is astronomical. And the amount of manpower that goes into that kind of thing that you lose from somebody missing weight is crazy as well. Am I onto something here? I mean, I don't really think that Dana's being forthright when he says all the different athletes like it at 4 o'clock. But from a business standpoint, I think this is the right move.
Okay, so there's two answers here. You said from a business and promotional standpoint, this is the right move, and it's hard to argue with that on multiple fronts. I remember not that long ago, I remember being in Montreal for UFC 124, and it felt like the Bell Center was filled up to see GSP and others weigh in. Of course, I remember being at 189, 194 for those Conor fights, and literally 4/5 of the MGM Grand was full just to see those. There is intrigue. It is a spectacle. It is free. It's a part of the experience. People come in early to watch it. And now that they moved it to the mornings for the past 2 years, the ceremonial weigh-ins are, you know, they're rendered useless. There's no intrigue.
Yeah, I'm disappointed. I wanted a fighter to come up and ask for a towel at the ceremonial weigh-ins. It never happened. I was trying to push Elias to do it, but nobody did it.
That would be funny. I don't even know why they have a scale there. I guess it's just for
it's a prop.
For a prop. But there's no commissioner there or anything like that. And so I get it. It just makes a lot more sense from a promotional standpoint. I get that. Also, I would imagine the TV partners, you know, have noticed that there's less interest in their weigh-in broadcast because we already know what happened. And it always surprised me that the UFC kind of – and they've opened up a little bit very recently, but they pretty much from, like, a media standpoint in terms of what they put out, they pretty much ignore the morning weigh-ins. And that's where all the intrigue is. I mean, those things I kind of joke about them, but, like – those things.
Yeah, put it on Fight Pass.
Like the greatest theater.
Yeah, I loved it. Put it on Fight Pass. Have somebody doing commentary like you do for MMA fighting.
Yes, what an idea, right? I mean, I was just sitting there.
It's free views.
You're sitting there and you're seeing how the sausage is made. In the past, it would all be going on behind the scenes, behind a curtain, and you never really saw what was going on. There's nowhere to run. You see these guys walking down with bedhead. They have everyone's just figuring it out as we fly. It was just so chaotic that I was like, we have to broadcast this. Why aren't we broadcasting this? And then, of course, you get you coming in singing, you know, theme songs for old TV shows. You know, it's an incredibly entertaining telecast.
Thanks for putting me on the spot with that, by the way. I appreciate it.
Oh, come on. I feel like your career has just grown exponentially since that moment. I feel like that's like the major turning point of your career. But anyway,
I have gotten no record deal offers since.
Well, that doesn't surprise me, but I just feel like street cred wise, you're at a different level. So I get what you're saying, but you're missing a very important point here. This is not about us. It's not about media coverage. It's not about promotion. It's not about business. It's about the health and safety of the fighters. And to me, if there has ever been an example that these fighters are sorely lacking having a seat at the table, having a voice, you know, they are truly the voiceless, because here they are for the first time that I can ever remember actually unified on a single subject. They are never unified on anything, but this time it has been unanimous. Can you tell me one fighter that has come out and said, I want the 4 o'clock. I don't know who that fighter is.
Maybe they're being silent because they don't want people to gang up on them. But Joe said the same thing. Joe said that, like, at the fighters summit, they should be voting on it, but they don't have a union. There's no body that votes on these things.
It is astounding to me that if they let this happen, that this actually comes to fruition, because you know how the fighters are. And sometimes they don't like to, you know, go against Dana White. He's their promoter, and I get that. Ultimately, you know, he's signing their checks. So you would think, to get in his good graces, someone would come up and be like, I got you, Dana. I'm on your team. Let's do this. 4 o'clock. Even the guys who miss weight, the Charles Oliveiras of the world, who has missed weight 5 times in his UFC career, the Darren Tills of the world, the heavyweights, who for them, you'd think they just want to sleep in, you know. All those people have also said, I want to get it over with. And it's not just about getting it over with. The reason this was put in wasn't to, you know, give the fighters more time to cut weight. It was to give them more time to rehydrate. And so
without IVs, it's ridiculous.
Yeah. So when you hear Dana say, like, oh, we've talked, who are these people? Now, look, you could in turn say, oh, you on Saturday you talked to 11 fighters, and you had all these people tweet me, maybe it was an extra 10 to 15. Let's say it's like 20 to 25. Not one of them voted in favor of 4 o'clock. Okay, you say, well, we have 500 fighters. But I feel like at that point, 25 to nothing is a pretty darn good sample.
It's like basically like polling for an election.
Yes. So – look, maybe this is the thing that tips them. I spoke to Ally Quinta on Monday. He said, I'm not going at 4.
Yeah, he said he's going in the morning.
I don't know how that's going to work if there's no one there to actually record the weight. But they need to realize that this is a microcosm of a larger issue. They have no voice. Their voice is not being heard and respected. And if it's not going to be heard and respected for an issue, we can talk about the Reebok deal. We can talk about the TV deal. We can talk about USADA, all this stuff. This is something that directly affects their health. And if they're not going to be heard, well, when it comes to something that directly affects their health, then they're not going to be heard about anything else. So hopefully this is an awakening for some of them, and they realize that maybe it's time to get a little more united.
They should do it Thursday nights. When we do media day for UFC 223 and we're interviewing Max Holloway and he's not on the card on Saturday, it's basically like a waste. So why not do it Thursday nights? These guys will have 48 hours to rehydrate, which scientifically they say is the amount of time your brain needs to rehydrate. Sure, a lot of them are going to pack on pounds and be bigger than their opponents in some cases. But at the same time, you don't need to do it Friday nights. You can do it Thursday nights and let these guys do it in a more healthy fashion. You're still moving it to the afternoon. So if the problem is mornings, that's solved. That's my opinion. And I don't know if they'll listen to little old me, but I think that would be the way to do it.
Well, you know, it's funny because, like, there's no rhyme or reason to any of this, right? I mean, the Illinois Commission, for no reason given, just started the weigh-ins early on Friday. Oh, everyone's here. Let's do it at 8:40. And then, of course, there's the Romero situation where they said, you know, they were cutting short his extra time by an hour, and the doctors were, according to both him and his team, they were there and had no problem with him continuing. So, yeah. Thursday, Wednesday, whatever you want to do. There's no rhyme or reason. Like, they're just making this.
Yeah, that's true. They're making it up on the fly.
Honestly, why can't you do 9 to 4? And I know the reason for that is the commission doesn't want to wait there for 7 hours. But, like,
that's their job.
You want to weigh in early? Great. You know, if you want to weigh in early, awesome. Get it over with. If you want to wait till 4, awesome. Here's some extra time. Like, the Illinois Commission should be. You know, this is a commission that gets one UFC event a year. And I know they get other, you know, combat sports events. You know, Bellator's been there, Glory's been there. UFC obviously brings in the most money. If the UFC wants to do a seven-hour window, really, I feel like they can accommodate. They're making a lot of money off of this event. I feel like they should be able to accommodate. So, you know, Nevada may be different, California different. But, again, it really doesn't matter what you or I think. It's about the fighters. The fighters, if they come out and say 4 o'clock, God bless you. If they come out and say 4 a.m., God bless you. We need to follow them on this one. Like, we pull them along in so many different directions when it comes to media obligations. You know, Aaron, you and I, we have to fast one day a year for Yom Kippur. It's the worst day of my year. I dread it. I absolutely hate it.
Joe's here next to me laughing, a guy that cuts weight for kickboxing. But
exactly. That's my point. Like, these men and women, I have so much respect for them. I have so much admiration for them that they put their bodies through this and then have to compete in a cage or a ring and try to be at their best and try to make the most amount of money and win titles that are going to be remembered for a lifetime. It doesn't make sense not to listen to them. Listen to them. It's very simple. Do what they want.
Am I the only one who's queasy about this Greg Hardy situation?
I'm surprised that it's happening so soon. You know, when I heard that he was coming over to mixed martial arts, honestly, I felt like it was just, you know, something to do before he gets back into the NFL.
He's not getting back into the NFL. That ship
sailed. Oh, yeah, I know. But that ship sailed. But I'm talking about 2 years ago when I first reported
it.
And I asked him this question, like, you know, if they called you tomorrow, you're dropping all this, right? And he said, of course, he's dropping all this. It's way more money to make. That's what he was – you know, best at. So he makes the transition, and then you start to hear about him, you know, living at the dorms for a year and people who are respected in the sport, like Dean Thomas coaching him and having no problems. And you're starting to think like, okay, this is really happening. And then he fights a couple times. And even when he fought like once, twice, I was like, all right, this is a nice little thing. He's not going to actually go through with this. And then the UFC adds him to the Contender Series. And I know it's not technically the UFC, but let's be honest, it's pretty much the UFC. And then, of course, he fights last night and he wins, and then he gets that contract. And I'm like, I can't believe the guy is a professional, 1-0. And it's basically like, is the juice worth the squeeze? Is all the attention that they're getting? Because they got a ton of attention yesterday for it on many different non-MMA platforms. But is it worth it? The criticism comes with it. And it's like amazing to listen to Dana talk about Nick Newell,
he's a circus act.
Yeah, and like Greg is, and look, it appears as though he's athletic. It obviously appears as though there's talent there. But I mean, to say that he has a checkered past is an understatement. And, you know, I feel like for the UFC, I hope that they did their due diligence. You know, I hope that they sat down and said, is this someone that we want to be in business with? Clearly, Dana seems to have some kind of affinity for him. But it's going to, I hope they're ready for the criticism, because if he gets on that, you know, big card, as he continues, they want to put him again on Contender Series. just more and more of it is going to come, and I hope they're ready for it. And now you're put in an uncomfortable position. I was on a radio show yesterday, a national radio show, and they were asking me questions like I was the one who signed them, like asking me to defend this. And I didn't sign them. I don't want to defend someone who's put it. So, like, they have to be ready to defend this because they're the ones signing him. And, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of baggage there, and I do feel uneasy at times. But ultimately, it's not our job to defend or feel good or bad about it. It's our job to cover what's going on in the UFC, and if they want to be in business with someone like Greg Hardy, then, you know, we have to cover. Of course, we can opine on it, but, you know, ultimately they're the ones that are going to have to answer those questions.
Joe, is there anything you want to add?
No, just more of Ariel. I'm going to call you Coach Ariel. One suggestion, man,
yeah, right.
For me to help out my journalism side. You know, any advice for me?
Oh, yeah. Well, I have a few bits of advice. Honestly, I don't think you need much of it. I think you're doing a great job, and I think you do a wonderful job on the broadcast as well.
Thank
for
you.
Glory. So I wish you continued success, and you're representing Canada very well on the international stage.
All right. Thank you, sir.
But the number one piece of advice that I like to share is listen. You know, when I do my show on Mondays, and it sometimes lasts over 6 hours, and I think Monday we had 18 guests, I didn't have a single question written down. Now, of course, I feel like I'm well-versed on the topic of mixed martial arts at this point, but the reason I don't like to write questions down is because I find that when we have a list of questions going into an interview, we don't listen.
Yeah.
When you go to a party or a social gathering, you don't bring questions with you. You don't know who you're going to meet, but you know how to converse, and you know how to listen, and you know to ask follow-up questions and to be interested. No one wants to talk to someone at a party who's just going to talk about themselves. You're going back and forth. It's like a game of tennis. And so I find, you know, sometimes I'll watch interviews and I see someone sitting there, you know, with an iPad or a sheet of questions. And I say, oh, right off the bat, this person isn't very good at their job, because you should have done the research, and then you should feel comfortable enough to sit there with the person and listen and ask proper follow-ups. Because, again, the most important thing of a question could be said in the last word of the answer. Excuse me, the important thing of an answer could be said in the last word, like the very last word. And you often see someone already have their question teed up, and they completely miss it. They drive right by that exit. So to me, just be comfortable, be prepared, be confident, but listen.
I agree.
And don't overdo it. So, yeah, that would be my biggest piece of advice.
Yeah, because, I mean, with the commentary, it's different. But with Glory now, they have me doing more one-on-one interviews. So getting that advice is really important for me.
Yeah, with the commentary, you're reacting to what you're seeing, and that's so natural to you. But, you know, some people think, and I'm not trying to say that I do brain surgery, like, oh, anyone could just stand there with a mic and ask questions. But I feel like there is a science to it.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And I think that's where I'm trying to work on the most, and just that's why I study your stuff, Rogan, and just keep learning.
Thank you. Yeah, you know, and again, it's trying not to overthink it. Try to put yourself in the position of, hey, I'm at a bar or a party, a social gathering, and this is how I talk to people. And especially if it's like, look, if someone said to me tomorrow, or I'm sure said to you, like, hey, you have to go interview a bunch of NASCAR race drivers, yeah, maybe I'd feel a little less comfortable. But this is, you know, this is what we live and breathe. So if we can't, you know, if we can't conduct a 5, 10, 15-minute interview without a list of questions and we're unable to just sit there and listen and ask proper follow-ups, then what are we doing?
Yeah, no, I agree.
Except Joe has guys pick fights with him during interviews, which you usually don't have.
Wait, what's that?
Joe has guys like pick fights with him during Glory interviews. Oh, when are you getting back in, Joe? I'll fight you.
Yeah, I've been called out a few times. It made it fun. I did an in-ring interview, and I had one of my rivals in the sport, Nikki Holtzkin, call me out, which was interesting.
And how did you? I
had to spin it professionally. I'd be like, I would love it, you know. The fans would love it, but let's get back to the fight kind of thing. Let's step back.
Well, you see, that's why I have a lot of respect for you, and that's why you're a mensch, if you know what that means, which is a gentleman in Yiddish. Because, look, we saw a situation with Michael Bisping this past weekend, and he was interviewing Colby Covington, and I have a lot of admiration and respect for Michael. I've talked about that at length, but I don't think that he did the right thing on Saturday. I feel like you have to separate yourself. You're not there to teach anyone a lesson. You're not there to put yourself over. You're not there to pick a fight. You're not there to go into business for yourself. You're there to interview someone who just wants to fight. That's his time. That's her time. That's their moment. And so I agree with what you did 100%. That's, he could go that route, but it's important for you to get the train back on the track and focus on that person. It's not just because you're given a platform with a microphone doesn't mean that now you could go into business for yourself.
I think I'm the only one who disagrees. I thought it was fun, and I think with Bisping, you know what you're going to get with him. The unpredictability of Bisping is part of the package, in my opinion. It's not really. Is it professional? No, it's not really professional. But Bisping is who he is, and I think that anybody who is watching that isn't turning away.
Look, there's a fine line. We had a couple situations with Charles Barkley earlier this year with athletes where he said some things, and then obviously later had to apologize. I just feel like, man, if an athlete comes on your show to talk about his or her big moment, they just won a belt for the first time, they were just in a 5-round fight, it's not your place to teach them a lesson. It's not, you can ask them some tough questions, you can poke, you can prod, you can try to make it a little uncomfortable if that's truly what you're setting out to do. But I just feel like when you're like saying things which kind of come off as a bit of a threat, or like that a fight could happen and things like that, what's the point? First of all, he's retired, so the fight's not happening. And what good comes out of that?
Now, different weight class also.
Yeah, the people at Fox were like, oh, this is great. Everyone, is talking about this. But to me, that's the wrong kind of news that you want to make. It's happened before. Remember Tony Ferguson and Kevin Lee? That was awkward.
Yeah, that
as
was
well.
Awkward.
And Ferguson actually handled that pretty well, but Lee just kept going at him.
Yeah, it was for a minute or two, it's fine. But and is it me, or did that whole segment just feel like a bad SNL skit? Like they kept going to cutting to each analyst, and the questions were all disjointed.
Oh, the Lee and Ferguson one?
No, the one on Saturday.
Oh,
the one.
It was odd. I thought the Lee and Ferguson one was more awkward to me.
Yeah, that one was pretty awkward too. It was like last year. It was almost exactly last year. So I don't remember it as well as this one, but I remember thinking that I thought Lee came out a little better in that one, and I remember Tony Ferguson blocking me on Twitter as a result of that. But we have made up. You see, like I was saying earlier, you have these tiffs, but then you make up, and there's only respect. So it's just one of those things in our sport where analysts come and go, and there's not like a set three or four like you see in other sports, NBA, NFL. And I think that the rules are a little different. Now, I'm not offended by this, but if I was the producer in the year, I think I would have said all right, let's just take a step back here and. It's fine to make it entertaining. It's fine to poke, but when it gets a little too personal, I think that's a little much.
Ariel, you're going to ESPN. You got to embrace debate, buddy.
Chael and I are going to have a show.
Yeah, there will be no shortage of debate there.
Yes,
I actually said when Bayless left, they should have hired Chael instead of Max Kellerman. Don't you think Chael could have held his own on that show? He would have been a star on First Take.
Yes.
Am I insane?
He really knows nothing about sports.
Yeah, but that would be part of the fun. Just have someone coach him.
Man. Okay, it's easy when it's talking about J.R. Smith blowing a thing, when it's the biggest stages, but what about in in November when there's nothing going on? So that's a tough ask. But hopefully, if you're that big of a fan, hopefully we figure out a way that you're able to watch this one, because it'll be somewhat similar to that, to that format we're just talking about. And what's exciting about it is that they specifically told me, this is a show for the hardcores. We're not trying to dumb this down. We're not trying to appeal to the mainstream. We want this to be about the hardcore topics. It doesn't have to be all about Connor, all about Ronda or something like that. It really is catering to the hardcore, which excites me greatly.
Yeah, I'm an unabashed Chael Sonnen mark, so I will be very. Hopefully, we can get the show in Canada. That's the big question mark. Because if it's ESPN Plus exclusive, who knows? I'm gonna have to talk to some suits
Please.
About this.
Please, my mom would be so thankful if you're able to pull that off.
Send me her number. I'll get her on the phone with our VP.
That would be great. No one would promote me better than my mom. She listened to every single minute of that of my show on Mondays. On this past Monday, she was away. She wasn't even home, and walked around for 6 hours listening to the show.
That's a commitment. It's a commitment for anybody.
Even with my mom, she couldn't watch kickboxing at all when I was fighting because she couldn't see her son. And now she listens, watches everything. She knows all the glory fighters' names. Now she loves the sport, but she hated it when I was doing it.
Yeah, it's amazing to see, obviously my mom isn't a fight fan, and you said the same about yours, but, I can imagine just now being a parent, you just want to support anything that your kids do. So it means a lot when you have your parents, you know, still able to support you like that, even as an adult.
What's your wife's level of interest in the sport?
I would say she doesn't hate it. She just, she's not a big fan of watching TV, and she's a very athletic person. So she always thinks it's weird. Like, how can you sit and watch people play basketball? Don't you want to just go outside and play basketball? She doesn't quite understand like the emotional connection. I've known her since I was 12. So she has seen me like go crazy about the Knicks and the Expos and things like that. So she understands the level where I'm at, but she can't quite do it herself. And then as far as fighting goes, like, she appreciates it. Like, she really likes Rose Namajunas. She really likes Holly Holm. She has an affinity for the female fighters, of course. But she doesn't, like, go out of her way. But sometimes, like, when she knows it's someone that I have a connection to, like, for example, on Saturday, she asked me how CM Punk was doing. We actually met him. She met him. I was invited to, I'm not sure if I ever said this, but I was invited to Paul Heyman's daughter's bat mitzvah.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Believe it or not. Yes. And only one wrestler was there, and it was CM Punk. And so we actually got to, like, spend a bit of time.
Lesnar wasn't there?
Lesnar was not there, believe it or not. No. Could you imagine Lesnar at a bat mitzvah? So she appreciates this. She obviously has tuned into the show from time to time. She likes some of the athletes, but she doesn't go out of her way to watch it if I'm not there.
Yeah, we don't want Lesnar lifting people up on chairs. They just go flying.
He can do it by himself.
Yeah, he can do it by himself. You don't need, like, four people standing around.
One-handed.
Yeah.
Yes, it'd be incredible.
Yeah, that's pretty interesting stuff that you were at Paul. That's a good scoop. I like that.
No problem. That's for you. That's exclusive to TSN.
So this is my wife's take on the sport before we wrap this up. This is what she says about MMA. She doesn't watch it. She says, when I watch it, I feel like I need to call the police.
Wow.
And that's her.
That's how brutal it is for her?
That's her take on... she actually, she can sit and watch kickboxing for some reason. Like, she's like, she kind of gets until someone gets knocked out. But for MMA, she says, I feel like I should call the police.
Wow.
Yeah.
Still, till this day.
It's
assault to her.
The only fight that she sort of liked is one of the most hated fights in the history of the UFC, which was Talis Latis versus Anderson Silva, because she understood the strategic element of why Latis was going to his back and found that interesting. But she can't watch fights.
Were you there live, or were you watching on pay-per-view?
I think I watched it the next day or something. Yeah, that was your first one you went to, wasn't it? Like, down in Abu Dhabi? Or,
no, that was
or Dubai?
Montreal, wasn't it?
Montreal, yeah.
That was Montreal.
Because I went as a
Maya,
young
Maya
kid
was
to
Dubai.
Watch.
Yeah.
I went as a kid to watch.
That's one of the things that impresses you about me, Ariel. I can say UFC 135 and you know exactly where it is and what. I can't do that. I don't know how you do it.
Of course. John Jones versus Quentin Rampage Jackson, Denver, Colorado.
I'll take your word for it.
Yeah.
All right, Ariel. Well, thanks so much for your time. You've been more than generous with it. And best of luck with everything at ESPN. Welcome to the family. Hopefully we can have you on some TSN segments sometime.
That would be great. I would love that. And thank you to you, Aaron, for your support. I saw what you tweeted about me, and it meant a lot. And Joe, I'm a big fan as well.
Thanks, man. Likewise.
I'm a supporter of Glory. You got great people there, like my man, New York Rick.
Yep.
And Marshall Zelaznik.
Yep.
Some other people as well. So I wish you guys the best as well. And
thank you, sir.
Thank you for having me on.
All right, Ariel. Our pleasure. Thanks so much.
Okay, guys. Take care. Have a good day.
That was Ariel Helwani. Wow, he loves to talk, and we love to listen. He's fantastic.
I called him Coach Ariel, man, because he's so good at it. He just can talk, and the way he interviews, his skills, his ability to pull out information from guys is really good.
He really is a savant with it. He's very, 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 very well-versed in the art of the interview. Yeah, and you can tell that growing up, he watched a lot of them.
A lot of similarities with you. Outside of the Jewish side, but you guys are...
and Canadian, and but born the same year. We
very
actually
good
do have a lot in common.
You guys are very knowledgeable and, very similar in style, too. So, good job.
His memory just wows me. I don't know. You could say UFC 55. No, I can't with those cards.
Yeah, but even like, not if you cards, say, but with other things you have good memory with. Like, I mean, if I ask you who fought who, you're pretty good with it.
Most of the time.
But maybe not the number of the show, but you'll nail who they fought and what order.
That kind of stuff I can remember. Yeah. Although I brought one up during an interview on Saturday, and I was like, oh, my God, I don't remember if that was correct or not. I looked it up afterwards, and I was right. But it was one of those ones where I was iffy. So Greg Hardy, as we mentioned with Ariel, won a UFC contract sort of on the Dana White Contender Series. He's now 1-0 as a professional. They were saying that they were thinking of having him do another Contender Series fight just to, like, get more reps at the end of the season. I like that idea, but I don't think that they should have him fight in LFA. I think you put him in the UFC. There are enough heavyweights that he can beat that are lower level.
Put a nice fight pass now. Let's start him off slow, I think is good. Like, he's got four amateur fights, all four finishes. So, yeah. I mean, you got to think, like I keep mentioning, I think some of the best athletes to transition from an outside sport to MMA has to be football.
Well, look at Dominic Reyes. He was a safety. He's tearing it up right now. Matt Mitrione.
Yeah, like, I mean, Brandon Schaub. Yeah, like, Schaub. A lot of guys are really good football players, could do amazing. I think he'll have a better career than obviously than CM Punk, and he already has. So starting him off on a UFC fight pass, build him up slowly, why not?
And other than Herschel Walker, he's got the best football credentials of any fighter.
Yeah, I mean, it's incredible. And they're all finishes, too, so he has the ability to, you know, strike well. How's his wrestling? Who knows? But
we haven't seen it yet. But at the same time, I don't know. Something about it just makes me uneasy because of his checkered past. And as Ariel said, is the juice worth the squeeze? Is it going to get any sort of? I mean, sometimes you can say there's no such thing as bad publicity. People are covering it. Greg Hardy was on SportsCenter. You know, like people, it shines a light on the sport. It gets Contender Series going. But at the same time, you know, Dana White says, you know, everybody deserves a second chance. This isn't his second chance. This is his first chance. Yeah. He never faced the music for any of his alleged crimes, where there's like pretty severe photographic evidence. In addition to that, like after all that stuff came out, he still got a $10 million contract with the Cowboys. So there hasn't been any music that he's faced. So, you know, it's not really his second chance. He's still kind of on his first chance.
Yeah, 29 years old, too.
Yeah, very young.
Obviously
hits hard. I don't know if you saw the knockout. It's pretty crazy. But, you know, the heavyweight division is starting to get some new blood, which, you know, can't be, which isn't bad for the promotion. And you got to look at it from their standpoint. Brock Lesnar and Jon Jones keep teasing a fight. You think we'll see it happen?
I don't know. It seems promising. I just think it's going to be an issue with USADA and Lesnar.
Well, and Jones.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm hoping Jones is a little bit more responsible now after everything, being so close.
Yeah, but how long is he going to be out for? Like, they're following USADA's lead. The commission's following USADA's lead. So if USADA says, oh, it's like only a year and a half, you just never know.
I don't, part of me wants for that fight, and it sounds bad to say because we're going backwards, but like, can you sort of take a little break and just, you know, for one fight, get one little pass? Because it'd be nice to see that fight.
Rousey's still in the testing pool. They haven't tested her in 3 years, so.
And she's being inducted to the Hall of Fame soon.
She has retired. Who knows? Yeah. They're not testing her. I mean, they've got to test her if she's still in the testing pool. I'm going to ask Dana White about that next time I see him. So if you're listening, PR team, just tip him off about that. Ariel, that was fun. That was good. We got no card this weekend. Father's Day.
Yeah, that's exciting for you. You're going to get homemade cards from the kids and stuff.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, those are the best ones.
Yeah, so I'm looking forward to that. Don't really have any big plans, but it will be nice to not have to stay up till 2 a.m. the night before.
Yeah.
Although I would have had a tailor-made excuse to sleep in, which is great. Oh,
yeah, but
Father's Day.
Saturday's going to come and we're like, I wish there was something. There's always that I wish there was something.
Yeah, is there any? There's
the
no
kids
glory.
Are going to go to sleep and there's going to be nothing to watch.
I can't think of any big boxing. Yeah, I don't know. There's golf. U.S. Open on TSN. Enjoy. Joseph Valtellini on YouTube, what do you got? What's happening lately?
We're posting a new video couple days. It should be out actually today. I'm hoping today. A new video. I don't know which one. I did two of them, so I don't know which one my video team's releasing.
How to heal shins.
Yeah, that's what you need.
I need that video.
It's so funny, though. So those who are listening, Aaron had a little bruise on his shin, and he asked me how to heal it. And my classic answer is, keep kicking on it. And he tried it, and it didn't work. So,
well, no, I thought you said to, like, kind of try to get the blood.
Yeah, try to get it, rub it out. Didn't work for you.
Didn't work. It just made it worse. Yeah. My wife got mad at me for following Joe's advice, not her
advice.
Now
she's mad at me, too?
She's mad, I don't know.
Am I going to get some tweets and some hate tweets?
She's not on social media.
Okay, good.
Or at least not on Twitter. you got some more videos coming up. That's good.
Yeah, gym's going well. Yeah, I have one of my main business partners and one of my closest friends in training, Troy Sheridan. He's fighting in Glory. He got moved to the Denver card, so that's exciting for the Team Bazooka. My other MMA fighter, Tariq Ismail, TKO, Montreal, August 2nd. Again, so we got some big high profile fights coming up, so we're pumped.
Cool. Does Tariq train with you down the street?
Yeah,
let's have him in sometime.
Yeah, he's a talker. He
follows everything.
Pretty much. Yeah, he'll be pretty good to talk. So why not? Especially before his upcoming fight, and just to see where the local scene's headed.
Yeah, let's pick his brain.
Because
my
goal for him is 2019 UFC. So that's our path. That's
our
goal.
Calls.
And he's ready. He's ready now. He just needs to show. He's a three-sport athlete. He's got boxing, MMA,
you know, and kickboxing experience.
I was hoping you were going to say like cricket or something.
No,
something completely different.
That would be nice.
Who's he fighting? Do you know?
We don't know yet.
Okay,
so we'll find out.
It's on the card. That'll be fun. And of course, if you want to be like Tariq Ismail and become a UFC fighter, you can go to Bazooka Kickboxing 680 Progress, or if you just want some exercise.
That's it. Everything. We got it all. Jiu-jitsu, grappling, women's kickboxing, co-ed, intermediate, advanced fighting. We got it all.
I go for the hot yoga classes personally.
Yeah. The stretching with Joe?
Yeah, exactly.
That's a personal one.
Yeah, exactly. Right. That's just a one-on-one class. Nobody else is invited to that one.
That's your special class.
Well, thanks everybody for joining us. We do appreciate it. Oh, we didn't break down our picks. Should we say who?
Let's do it now because you got the advantage, right?
Yeah, we'll just do it next week. It's fine.
All right.
We'll break it down next week. We'll have our picks for UFC Singapore. It's Cerrone versus Edwards in the main event. And it's going to start at, I think, 5 a.m., and I'll be here in the office watching it. Maybe 4 a.m. Who knows?
Sounds fun.
Yeah, that'll be. Yeah, it sounds great. Well, thanks, everybody, for tuning in. We appreciate the time of Ariel Helwani and of course, the listeners. So thanks for tuning in. We'll be back next week.
Thanks for listening to the TSN MMA Show. For all the latest UFC news, visit tsn.ca/UFC.